Greetings and salutations and happy holidays. Uh-oh, it's that time of year. Episode 167 of the Blind Bargains Cast now begins. I'm your host, Joe. Well, I'm your co-host, because over there, that guy over there, that's JJ. Hey JJ, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going? Good to see you again. Or hear
you. Back in front of microphones, actual live microphones, talking and things. Although last week was pretty fun. I enjoyed last week. And how's it going with that shield?
Any better? Well, it might be on the classifieds soon.
Ooh.
Not sure. No. I mean, it's just not doing so well.
Funny, like the day after I heard you record that, I saw that it was like the emulation machine for video game nerds. So I was like, well, that's... It's not exactly us.
Yeah, that's where it excels. Exactly. It does great with that stuff. But, well, go back to 166 if you want to hear about that. Or if you want to hear about Joe's TV stuff. Hey, do you have more TV stuff?
I do have a little bit more TV stuff. So we're going to talk about the soundbar. And I will talk about the Vizio. Ready for this name? I know it'll knock your socks off. The Vizio SB3621E8N.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Rolls right off.
Yeah, that's great. Okay.
So we'll talk a little bit about sound and how to purchase a soundbar and some surprises I had with getting this new soundbar.
Does it talk? And, can you use it?
You know, it's really funny is that the TV talks through the soundbar, and it wasn't something I expected. So surprise, surprise, there will be speaking devices during my demonstration.
Well, there's lots of speaking devices that are produced by Google, who is sponsoring us this week. If you haven't heard, Google has all sorts of user research opportunities where you can sign up and you can get some surveys from them, perhaps make some money. That URL is google.com/user research, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that later on in the show. But thank you once again to Google for sponsoring us this week, as well as our summer convention coverage and so much more. So really do appreciate that.
Instagram is a way that you might be actually showing pictures off from summer convention or maybe for the holidays. The problem with that is it's not been very friendly to us, even though it's a division of Facebook who's been going out of its way to try and make itself more accessible. Instagram has been kind of a vast source of unfriendliness on both Android and iOS and even the web. Seems like that's changing now that Instagram is going to add alt captions and other ways to make that a little bit more friendly.
And doesn't it seem like the Facebook acquisition helped that? Because I could count on one hand the number of times that we actually mentioned Instagram on this podcast ever. Which to some people would be like, well, why would we even care? It's a picture site. But there's, you know, a lot of information included in pictures.
For some people, that's their marketing. Like they use Instagram as their lead marketing source.
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of very many blindness companies that do because, well, like you said, it wasn't really accessible. The Facebook thing helps that. So those same image descriptions, as awesome or vague as they can be, picture contains food, are now on Instagram as well. And you can either put in your own alt text or you can use the ones that provide. Of course, you're better off putting in your own because that will actually make a lot more sense and be more descriptive than just picture contains food. But it is a start, and they say there's more coming, for sure.
And it seems to be following in the line like Twitter, where it's not easily or readily apparent that it exists. Like, I was reading some people online saying that it was under the advanced tab, and you have to kind of know where enable, it is.
Yeah, feature, and yeah, and then you have to, the instructions about how to add alt text was in an image. That did not have alt text.
That doesn't interesting. Make it any easier. Go to Twitter and Facebook to learn how to use Instagram. No, it's definitely a work in progress. Baby steps. You know, I don't want to poo-poo anything that is at least trying to get
excited.
There.
In fact, this gives me a chance we can promote ahead. Jesse Beach, who is from the engineering team that helped work on this feature for Instagram, is planning on joining us next week, 168. So if you have any questions about Instagram, send them in, feedback@blindbargains.com, or tweet us at blindbargains, and we will see what we can do and get those towards them. And we're thrilled to have Instagram on the show for the first time, and we'll, you know, have some questions about it. It's really explained, but I'm guessing the number of our listeners that use Instagram on a regular basis is minimal at this point, right?
Yeah,
you know,
well, got to start somewhere.
Because there was a reason to. So, I mean, this is how you change that. Because if you have more accessibility, then it suddenly becomes a service that, you know, we should be starting to pay attention to. So obviously that's going to change as they add more. And they do say Instagram does that. There's more to come over time. So we'll have to see how that works. Obviously, a lot needs to be done, but it definitely is a good start for sure.
Google introduced some new things this year, like the Home Hub and the Slate tablet. Both speak to various degrees, and Google is reaching out to do things like Flutter, where Flutter is this cross-platform ability for you to develop for both iOS and Android. They're reaching out to developers even more beyond the Google I/O conference. Google has got a survey up now, and they're looking for developers to be a part of that, and there is some compensation.
Hey, by the way, had you gone to google.com/user research, you may have already got an invite to this. But yeah, this one is geared towards accessibility developers. And so these are people that either, if you're doing coding, if you're in IT, if you use command line tools, if you manage servers, if you write apps for mobile platforms, if you don't know what I'm talking about, then this probably isn't the survey for you. But yeah, if you do,
move on. Yep.
Decent amount of money. I forget the exact amount, but it's a pretty substantial amount, at least as far as surveys go. We have a link in our show notes to blindbargains.com. I'm guessing, again, the number of accessibility developers that are in this category is probably not millions, unfortunately, because a lot of these tools do have barriers currently. So good that they're trying to work on that. And then you can take the survey. It's a 60-minute commitment, and they are looking for people to help. Hopefully it's still available by the time this show comes out. You never know. Sometimes these things move fast. So definitely stay on blindbargains.com, because that's where we post these things. Tangela found this one and put it up Wednesday as we're recording this. And we will see if it's still there. But that's the only way to check, is to go to blindbargains.com. And if that one's not there, maybe there'll be a new one for you.
Also, they've been updating the accessibility suite for Android a lot. There have been some talkback updates as well. We haven't mentioned them on the show, but they have been coming out. I've actually been seeing them through things like Android Police, which has been awesome to see accessibility news flying through.
It is
through
cool. Android it's always Police. Interesting to see mainstream sites try to describe features. But it is cool that they're covering them. You know, like, they'll pick the most minuscule thing and like, oh, this is a cool new thing. I'm like, no, that's actually not the big deal in this release. But hey, but I do appreciate you you doing something. They're up to 7.2 now. And by the way, yeah, that's what they're calling the TalkBack / Switch Access. All those things are in the Android Accessibility Suite, which they announced over the summer, actually, at I/O. When we interviewed Google about that.
Yeah, we may actually have had some of that mentioned on interview. No. Oh, yeah. Probably. From the middle of the year. Definitely. Roll back to the summer to hear more about Google Assistant and search and all order of things that we had Google. Thank you, Google, for your support.
I don't want to ignore the iPhone people.
No. But this accessible Reddit app, which people have talked about, now enters beta fully. I know this had come out, I guess the beginning of October, this had floated around that there was someone who had come up with a way to use Reddit, the popular site of messages and bulletins and the like.
And time wasting.
Used to call just bulletin boards back
then. Lots and lots of time wasting. this is an app called Dystopia with a Y, D-Y-S-T-O-P-I-A. I'm glad I'm doing this on a Braille display because I see that now.
I was about to say, and that seems like a video game name too. That just seems crazy.
Well, it was done by a 17-year-old kid, so that's where you get a name like that, which is cool. Another teenage developer working on stuff. The beta has been out for a few weeks, but I'm sure they're still looking for feedback. And definitely lots of features that ties directly into VoiceOver. Also some with stuff with transcription and things like that, and surfacing some of that accessible content. You know, there's some pretty cool stuff on Reddit, the way the community is. You may know this, Joe, but a lot of our listeners may not. There's a subreddit called Description Please, where people can submit memes or other pictures on Reddit and say, hey, can you describe this? And then somebody else will post back and they'll put the description of it up there, and then it will kind of link back. So there's lots of little things like that, which are really cool. And of course, you can either do that or you can just get lost in shower thoughts all day.
That is, Thoughts of Dog is still one of my favorite Twitter accounts. Thoughts of Dog is awesome. But that's Twitter.
There's probably a Reddit that goes with that, right?
Everything is one way or another. And Chansey had mentioned not too long ago, and we'd started playing around again with BeSpecular and other photo sharing like TapTapC to play around with photo apps. So there's lots of ways of playing around with those things. And of course, you can always share it to Seeing AI in some cases,
or
Envision AI. And see how that works. There's always a difference between a human and an AI interpreting, but still, it's a lot of fun just to see how people interpret things and the way they feel about it. That's kind of the way I thought about this new Voice Dream Reader app update, when you first are told that it now works with Apple Watch, you're probably thinking, why? And I have to admit, I was sort of in that camp at first. And then I started thinking about use cases of how this works. So what you can do in the latest version of VoiceDream Reader is you can connect that to your Apple Watch. It's an app that loads. If you already have an Apple Watch, you already have an iPhone, when you download the app, or if you already have it installed, it will go ahead and automatically install the app on your watch if you have that enabled. If not, then go over to your watch settings and allow that. And then as you go to it on your watch, it will ask to pair to a Bluetooth headset or some other Bluetooth device. The idea is that you could use your Apple Watch like the podcast app and read things on your Apple Watch while walking around doing exercise.
I was going to say, I could easily see a use case for that, especially if you're going to the gym or if you're going somewhere where you don't. I mean, the Apple Watch is so much more effective with either, you know, with data or something that lets you, now that you can do more things that you don't have to, because it doesn't need to be near your phone, right? To do this?
Right. Well, you know, within Bluetooth range of your phone, you can fall out of that and then it doesn't connect as well.
Can you download content on VoiceDream straight to the watch without the phone?
Sure. But do you want to sync them? So what you would do is, like I had the manual to the television that I talked about last week. And so I go into the app and I custom action on the manual, send it to my reading list, and then the reading list syncs with the watch. And then you can read it from there once when you've paired it to something audio-wise, because it wants to do that the minute that you launch the watch app. It wants to try and go to something audio-wise. And what I thought of was, what if you had a meeting, a critical meeting, and someone handed out a PDF, but you didn't get the PDF? How cool would it be to do that from your watch without pulling out your phone? You know, some people do that with keyboard connection, but it'd be really cool to be able to pair that to your earbuds, your AirPods, what have you, and then start reading this document while this meeting is going on. I always come back to work and how things work for individuals trying to be employed. And so that's a thought I had was, man, there's so many times I would have liked to have had this to be able to read a document in the meeting to follow along with what was going on. So really cool. Free update if you already have VoiceDream. Of course, VoiceDream is a paid app and definitely well something you want to consider.
One of the most well worth apps out there for sure. And put, especially on the iPhone side, that's where he's put 99% of his energy, and for good reason, because that's where the users are. So very cool.
The debate about whether things are worth it or not certainly surrounded Greg when he was here on our program last. The conversation still happens on the Ira Facebook page and other places. Several people have started to wonder, you know, why should they? Should they get involved? Should they not get involved? Here's my free month of... here's my code, you know, hey, how's it going? I saw that a lot after our show. It was really funny. But one of the things that you would say about the airport program is that most of them are domestic in the United States. Not anymore.
Until now.
No. Looks like Heathrow is the first of many airports probably to come online in the expanded IRA network for airports.
Hey, there you go. The first one, of course, Heathrow in London, England. So they are... available now, the first international one, as you said, one of the first international locations of any type, right? Because they've added some other stuff since we've talked about it. They have a thing going on with Walgreens right now. Not sure how long that will last, and some other stores. So they've been expanding in various spots here and some more universities. You know, it really leads to the question of, you know, the situations where you need IRA or where certain people need them, you know, are there going to be enough access locations where people are like, all right, I'll just use the access locations and kill my own membership or my own plan? Or do they care? Are they going to be okay? Because they get money off these access locations. I've seen various quotes, at least a dollar a minute, up to perhaps even more than that, $1 to $2 a minute. So, you know, I mean, airports that are buying these buckets are not getting discounts. They're paying per minute, just like we would. So,
right.
I mean, I guess you figure, what is the cost of hiring a staff member, running them around the airport, you know, all the overhead to do that, versus what is the cost of hiring IRA to do that? So I don't know what the costs are. I'm not an airport person, so I'm not sure what it costs.
And I wouldn't want to think about how much it's going to take to get through customs. What kind of plan would I have? Is there international roaming fee?
That's a whole different thing. Do the AT&T hotspots work?
Yeah,
they do.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's one of the first questions that jumped into my head. Byron Lee, a good friend of the program, went to Australia, and he ran into an issue because of customs and security rules, and he had to fill out the stuff. He couldn't, have other people assist him with it, and it just floored him because he could have gotten it ahead of time and filled it all out and had it with him to just hand over. Mm-hmm. But, there's things you don't think about when you travel internationally, especially as an American. So this is awesome. But, like most things in a blurb, there's always questions. So be sure to follow up with Ira if you have questions. Reach out to him on Twitter, write him, call him, and see what's going on. If you're thinking about making an international flight to the U of K.
That's right. Well, UK has its own stuff going on. That's a different show. Uh-huh. Not here. Hey, we're gonna talk some TVs TVs and soundbars, making your TV sound even better coming up. We had an interesting question coming up in Sound Off, talking about old shows. Remember those from way back when? From 4 years ago? No, maybe not.
Do we have to do the hand crank and get things together? We're gonna talk about 78 records again.
No, not that.
Okay. Some of my favorite NLS books are on old 8 RPM records. They're great.
Well, let me do this first. Before we get into the soundbar stuff, I need to tell you that this podcast is sponsored by Google. Our friends at Google are hard at work creating great technology products for everyone. They're inviting you to participate in Google User Research Studies, where you can help shape the future of accessible products and features and get rewarded for it. Now, here's the URL you need to go to. Head to google.com/user research. That's all one word. That is www.google.com/user research. And we definitely really do appreciate Google for sponsoring us this week on the BBQ. And now, Joe and Soundbars on episode 167.
Hey everyone, we're back to talk about soundbars. And last week, if you tuned in, you heard me talk about our new television that we have here, the Vizio 55F, and it just rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it? But it's a P-series television. And one of the things that I had noticed in the reviews was that the picture was stellar and fantastic and good for gaming and pretty good for movies. And the speakers really suck on this television. And, that's to be expected. As TVs get thinner, so do their speakers. And the traditional sound that we heard from giant television sets of the past are not exactly as good as the ones that we can buy today. It's very rare that you can find a television review in which they say, hey, these speakers are fantastic. Most recommend soundbars. And that's great for people who are not considering a large home theater system. And I mentioned last week that I used to sell those very large home theater systems. They used to be THX. I was heading towards certification to be THX certified to sell THX systems before my company that I was with fell apart, but that's not important right now. The important part is that I kind of know a lot about home theater and what makes that sound really, really good. So we're going to talk a little bit about the soundbar. We're going to talk about some ideas about how to approach sound, and then we're going to talk about some of the things that involve choosing a soundbar. And the first thing that we should talk about with this particular soundbar that I got, the SB3621E8N. Yeah, it rolls off the tongue just as well. That's what Vizio does. Makes some amazing names for products. The reason why we chose this is partially because we had a Vizio television, and by having a Vizio television going with a Vizio soundbar meant that we had all of the things that we needed up front. So when we plugged it all in, it was all going to work just fine and work with the same remotes. Now, the thing that you read it, but you're not prepared for is the size of something. So in this particular case, the soundbar is like 36 inches wide. It's a two-speaker soundbar, and it has an external sub. That means that I have to think about how wide my television is, how wide the entertainment center is. Will it all work correctly if I put them in the same places? Do I have to start thinking about mounting brackets. Those things. Okay. I'm not doing that. Some people do consider that. They like to mount their television and they like to wall mount their soundbar. If you remember what I said last week, I'm not a big fan of that because if you ever decide that you want to move the couch to the left or you want to redesign the living room, you're kind of stuck because you've locked everything into the wall. This is also why I'm not a big fan of speakers that mount into the ceiling and point downward. I used to say when I worked in sales that if you ever like the sound in the doctor's office, that's what you're going to get, and a lot of direct reflecting. And that's something you also should think about. If your room is heavily carpeted, you might find yourself doing really well to look at speakers that bounce sound all around, say like a something of a system that likes to spread the sound out. I'm not the biggest fan of Bose for many reasons. May stick a link in the show note about that, but I don't like the diffuse sound with Bose, and also I'm not a big fan of their bass module system, especially in their Acoustimass moving forward. But some people love it. And again, this is all subjective. So take whatever I'm saying with a big boulder of salt, because my ears are different than your ears, and your room is going to be different than the room that I'm in. And these are all considerations I think about. If you have a lot of hardwood and reflective surfaces, you may want to look at having more direct speakers, speakers that can move the sound in a certain direction. And you have what's called a sweet spot, where in front of the television is the best place for the best sound, and everybody fights for that space. And if it's a small space, that might work out better for you. The other thing you want to consider, like in the case with this, where I have a 2.1 system, which is two speakers with a subwoofer is the 0.1, we are in a house. We don't have neighbors directly near us. If you're in an apartment, you may have to give up the idea of having bass booming sound because all of your other neighbors would like you to, or they will all join up one night and remove your subwoofer when you least expect it. Kidding, of course. So you want to think about how much bass you can actually put out in the room that you're in. And since this is a family room and I've got an open stairwell nearby that leads down to the front door, having a 5.1 system wouldn't really work in here. I couldn't control the sound. I couldn't make a sweet spot, if you will. I couldn't say where things need to be. And another part that I would run into is that it's best, I know people are going to hate this, but it's best if you can have speakers near ear level. So consider how where you sit on your chair, your easy chair, your couch, what have you, where your ears are placed, because you can make a better envelope of sound around you if all of those are somewhat at ear level. And movies are mixed that way. Movies are generally mixed still in 2018 in an environment where all the speakers are the same kind, same phase, same tone, also very directed, also in a situation where you have a direct sweet spot, which is at the mixing console. And if you put speakers at odd angles, if you put speakers that are not directly linear to one another, if you put speakers higher or lower, you will notice in sound. And for some people, that matters. For other people, they don't. They don't have directional hearing. It doesn't make a big deal to them. In fact, if you turn the bass up about four more notches, that's the best sound they've ever heard. It really does, again, come back to how well you feel about something. Now, circling back to the soundbar, one of the things that I like about it is it does have an external bass module. And it was really easy to set up. It came with a coaxial cable, it came with some RCA jacks, and it came with an optical out, a Toslink cable. And that's what I'm using here on the television is a Toslink, and it just made life easier. It's a glass cable, so you had to be very careful, and it only goes in certain ways. Some of these cables are sometimes have caps on the end of them, and they're easy to break trying to remove the caps. In this particular case, it did not, which was nice, because I have actually seen that happen. So I'm using a digital connection. And the benefit of that is better sound, cleaner sound. The more digital processing can be done by the external component, the better. Some sound bars have video components on them, and you hook the HDMI from your information, say, you know, like a PlayStation or an Apple TV, into the sound bar. And then that relays it to the television. In this situation, the television is its monitor. It's its own video source. And the audio out of that television is shoving itself into the soundbar. So all my things are plugged into this television because it has five HDMI inputs. So I can plug everything into the television and roll it out to a soundbar, which is ideal because I'm not running an external, a gigantic stereo receiver. I'm not running an AV amplifier or something like that. But I could do that, but that's overkill for where we are and what I'm doing. And so those are things you also have to think of. If I'm going to do a more elaborate audio setup, say a 5.1 system, and a 5.1 system is a center channel, two front speakers, two rear speakers, and a subwoofer, and that forms that envelope of sound we were talking about, that might require you to consider something much more than a soundbar. You might want to start thinking about true AV components at that point. You may even see the phrase or term 7.1. 7.1 is a center speaker, two fronts, two middle speakers, and two rear speakers. And there are movies that are mixed in 7.1, and Yamaha has a tendency to use 7.1, although it is more familiar on other sets and things. You may also see some phrases like Dolby Digital, DTS, True Sound, this, that, and the other thing. Those get really deep in the weeds on the format of movie that you're going to play with. Most sound is not encoded in that. There are some people who do encode their music that way or mix their music that way. It comes and goes on how well that works. But movies are generally where you're looking at, movies and television for 5.1, 7.1. And if you're not doing movies, but occasionally, then who cares? You know, that doesn't really matter. Now, the other thing about this particular soundbar is since I only have two speakers, my center channel, I don't have one. I don't have dialogue coming crisply out of the center channel. It's not going to be clear and crisp. It's going to come out of the other two speakers. And again, that's okay for what we're doing and what we want for this room. That's fine. There's still stereo definition. It's a very wide soundbar at 36 inches. It fits under my television. If you have a smaller television, you would have to start thinking about how wide that soundbar is and where your feet of your television are. We're back to what I talked about last week. Will it tip over? Does it have good feet or is it a pedestal stand? Or do you just say, no, I'm going to hang it up off the wall and I'm going to use those brackets I pointed out a minute ago. Audio description. That is a very good thing to think about when considering audio. If you are looking at audio description tracks on, say, Apple TV or Netflix, sometimes that can affect the way that audio comes out of the soundbar. One of the things Ricky noticed was that bass was not as clear in, say, Thor Ragnarok. That was our test film for using Netflix. And so you may find yourself using different stereo modes to try and compensate for audio description ducking the presentation of the film up and down, depending on where the narration is. Or in some cases, you may find yourself not using audio description to get the more bigger punch of an audio soundtrack or score. That's, you know, hit or miss. Again, personal preference. Some people like chocolate ice cream. Some people like vanilla. Some people like strawberry. So you will have to think about, though, when mixing and matching, what are dialogue, read your reviews. How well do voices come out? Is music brighter in these speakers than it is with dialogue? And another thing is that most of these soundbars I've been reading in manuals come already pre-processed for movies. So if you want to hear music out of it more, in this case, this soundbar has Bluetooth connection, so I could actually pair to it and do Bluetooth audio over to it. And the manual is really cool. It actually says, oh, that's going to be compressed audio. It's not going to be that great. It at least warns you up front. That's what I liked about the manuals. It was very much not a techie manual. It told you that if you listen to audio from a Bluetooth-enabled device, it would not be as good as a true sound source. But it also said to me directly that out of the box, that this would be, you know, enabled for movie sound. If I wanted to hear music, I needed to play with the remote and flip it over. And that is another thing, is even though I can control the television and the soundbar at the same time, now that I've turned the speakers off on the television and all the sound is going directly to the soundbar, the thing is I don't have direct control of some of the advanced features of the soundbar. So I still need the remote, and you have to, you know, look at reviews of the soundbar you're considering, because If it's an HDMI-based soundbar, that means it has a video output, chances are the controls are going to be shown up on the screen. In this case, since I don't have an HDMI output off this soundbar, I'm actually having to look at little LED lights that let me know that some things are active or other things are not active. And they're not obtrusive, but they do require memorization. It may require you using a visual interpreter service, where like Aira or Be My Eyes or something like that for, you know, memorization to get that out of the way and set it up the way you like it. And then, you know, once when you got it the way you want, you memorize a couple of buttons and you're good to go. And that should work out really well. The thing that I wasn't prepared for with this particular soundbar, and this was a surprise, is that we actually have the television audio coming out of the soundbar now because I'm using that optical input. So we'll come over here to
power off.
I'll power this back on.
Power on.
There you go. That's kind of cool. So that's the sound from the television coming out of the soundbar, which was nice.
Stanley, watch free, normal, 5:36 p.m.
And that... There we go. This is actually from Dash Radio from the Watch Free or Pluto stations, and I can actually
923. Listen to the strip.
Right. That's been awesome. One of the downsides, though, to this that I found out while I was in,
oops.
Turn you down. Roger Daltrey and all those guys are getting really loud. Hold on, let's get over to another input real quick. I'm using the app on my phone to flip over to... We used the PlayStation on the last one. Yeah. Thought I would use the Xbox on this one. So the thing that was really a bonus that I didn't expect was now that we have the television going through the soundbar...
Audio. Network. Timers. Channels.
Those are the menus for the television that I'm flipping through.
Input settings.
There you go.
System. User manual.
Right.
System. Check for updates. System information. Menu language. English. Time and local settings. CEC.
A couple of people asked me to do this, so I thought I would.
Accessibility.
We'll come over here to accessibility. Here's TalkBack.
Speech rate. Slow. Slow. Normal. Speech rate. Normal. Zoom mode. Off. Speech rate. No, talk back on.
Right.
Speech rate. No, normal. Fast. Speech rate. Fast. Zoom mode. Off. Speech rate. Fast. Talk back on. Back.
Right. Talk and back on. One of the reasons on. Why I have it on slow.
Off. Back. Off. On. Off. On. Talk back on. Back. Talk back on. Speech rate. Fast. Fast. Normal. Slow. Speech rate, slow.
One of the reasons why is when we had multiple things coming out of speech, like either from the PlayStation or the Xbox or even just dialogue on television, it was difficult to hear what was being said by that speech, even in the soundbar. So we slowed it down so that way we could at least get more syllables out of it to figure out what was being said. But you heard that there. There are a couple of things that I have in this television that...
System.
Come over here to
input setting channel type network audio speakers off.
Right, so that means the speakers off. That means the television speakers are off, but the sound is going through the sound bar. So I
volume
still have sound.
Control display surround sound on.
Right.
Volume leveling off.
Let me turn
balance zip lip sync zero digital audio out PC analog audio out digital audio PCM.
Right. Okay. So PC
auto back auto PCM Dolby D bitstream.
So Bitstream and you heard Dolby D, Dolby Digital, those are all things that are supported. The downside that I found out was if I flipped over to Dolby Digital or did some stuff in Bitstream, the television stopped talking and, you know, everything else worked fine. But that doesn't work out really well for Ricky. So I went ahead and stayed in PCM. And then we can hear speech coming out of the soundbar from the television. And that matters because if Ricky doesn't want to use her phone to use some of the simulcast features or some of the Chromecast features even, those menus talk, that as I demonstrated last week, where we actually could hear things from YouTube TV and stuff. And if you don't want to drag your phone out, or maybe you've got something going on, or you left it in the other room, it's nice that I can actually use the TV remote with the speech and the soundbar and control it all independently and make that speech come out of the television. So I've left it in PCM. That way it's a little easier
digital for everybody. Digital audio out, PCM.
Get out of here.
Audio.
Okay, so those are all things that I thought were really cool that accidentally worked out in our favor. I wasn't necessarily looking for that when we chose all of this, but it's nice that the speech comes out of the soundbar. Depending on the type of setup that you're using, that may or may not be the case, depending how the TV emits its sound, depending how the soundbar takes in the sound, and how you're going to work all of that out. So the other thing is that you have to think about what the source is that you're getting your sound out of. So in the case of the Xbox, I could actually change a lot of this. And since this is a 2.1 soundbar, I had to go in and make some changes.
Signed in as the range, resume, launch, Soul Calibur trademark, recently used, my games and apps, button.
Okay, and after a quick reboot, I'm running an alpha of the Xbox software, so that crashed and you guys didn't get to hear it, but Patrick did.
Personalization, down 2 of 11, here. Selected. Network, 3 of 11, system, 4 of 11, select, display and sound, 5, system, 4 of 11, selected.
Display and sound.
Five, video output, 1 of 3, volume, 2 of 3. Audio output, 3 of 3. HDMI audio, stereo uncompressed, combo box, 1 of 3. If you so change your audio settings, be sure to recalibrate your Kinect and settings. Kinect and devices, Kinect doesn't hear me. When using this headset format, be sure to turn off any sound enhancements on the headset itself.
So I had to move this back to stereo, because I actually had the setup for surround sound and some other headphone adjustments that I was doing during testing. And I needed to change this to bitstream, because when I was using some of the Dolby Digital stuff, it was causing too much echo. And so I had to play with the sound source to better match the sound bar. And, you know, I can go in and change these.
Stereo things. Uncompressed, 2 of 5, selected.
All right.
5.1 uncompressed, 3 of 5, 7.1 uncompressed, 4 of 5, not bitstream out, 5 of 5, non-selected.
Right. And so all of that
HDMI
matters.
Audio, stereo uncompressed, combo box, 1 of 3.
Because the sound itself can, you know, what you're playing out of the box can affect the sound bar, and you have to experiment with what works best for what, you know, source that you're using. A lot of this, again, can be a little crazy at times, but it will pay off in the long run if you pay attention to what your sound bar can do, what audio sources you have. And if you want to do something crazy, if all you want to do is hook up, Fire TV to your television, or your television already has a Fire TV, and you have HDMI, and you plug it into the soundbar, you're good to go just as easily. It gets into very subjective terms on whether you can hear the difference between what I'm using, which is a digital cable, made of glass, versus a standard HDMI. If you have an Apple TV, that's fine too. There's no right or wrong. You may still find yourself playing around with the sounds and the settings, especially with audio description, because remember that's audio ducking, and things can sound really, really different. Because it's a different kind of track mixed in a different way than a true Dolby Digital track or a true DTS track, depending. If you're using a Blu-ray player, you might notice that some upper-end Blu-ray players have specific audio outputs rather than just one output out of the Blu-ray player into your stereo and into your sound source. The other thing, again, since this is an external base 0.1 subwoofer, it takes up another power outlet. So I actually have a power power cord for the soundbar and a power cord for the subwoofer. And the subwoofer is wireless, and it was paired at the factory, so I didn't have to do it, but there is a way to do it if I ever had to, if something was to go wrong. You kind of want to shoot for the subwoofer to go in a corner, and you want to play with that placement of where you want things to go. Some people don't like it behind the television. Some people like to put it behind a couch because if you want to be closer to the bass. Some people find that too much sound coming from one area of the house, the soundbar and the subwoofer, is too much, or that the subwoofer doesn't enhance the sound. It actually clouds the dialogue. It really depends on what you're watching. If you're watching old television, You know, that's not going to sound as good because of the way it was recorded. Say, Batman 1966 won't sound like, you know, Dark Knight from, you know, 2000. And so that's a big difference. Again, think about your sound sourcing. And again, one more time to reiterate, if you're going to do mostly music and not television, you want to make sure that the soundbar you're considering does that. Or are you going to go, you know, for the Sonos Beam? If you're going to go for the Sonos Beam, you know, some people are choosing that because then they can have some type of movie sound over music sound, where Sonos is kind of more towards music out of its general Play One speakers and its other line. And this particular soundbar had a bigger brother with Chromecast built in. Didn't really need that. Added $100 to the price tag. Don't know that I want to control my soundbar with my voice. But even then, it wouldn't necessarily control the soundbar all that much, other than raise and lower the volume. It wouldn't get me to some of the advanced settings. So if you're looking at a soundbar that has Alexa or has Chromecast built in, something like that, you want to read the reviews or go and read the manual to see how much that controls. As a whole, I'm okay with this soundbar. It does what I want it to do, in that it's wide enough. It fits under the television really well. The controls on the soundbar are unobtrusive. They're hard. In fact, I found them by accident, just running my hands over the top of them. They are buttons. The remote isn't that hard to learn. It's very tactile. And of course, since I have a Vizio television, it jumped right in and found itself and paired, which was nice without having to enter a code or typing into something to get it to learn it. That may be something you may have to do. So you may have to look into that before you choose that. I wasn't trying to be brand loyal. It's just that this particular soundbar was available on the day of purchase at a really good price. It's CNET's favorite soundbar of 2017, so it's an older model. Some of the newer models actually are putting the subwoofer in the soundbar, and I don't think I would really like that as much because we're back to that wall of sound we were talking about just a moment ago. So these are all things that you have to consider of how you're going to do this. This particular soundbar has been super reliable in the couple of days that we've been using it. It has really good bass sound. I haven't had to go in and really mess with much, which is good because, again, I'm not keen on having to memorize a bunch of LEDs. I will. But right out of the box, I just wanted to enjoy what we had gotten. And this kind of works for that. These are some ideas about sound and sound bars. If you have questions, feel free to write us or hit me up on Twitter, and I'll be happy to give you some ideas. And some of you have already had one or two really good ideas about Samsung and sound bars and what works and what doesn't work. But these are just considerations. Just think about this. Be a good shopper and read your reviews. Talk to others who may have it. Reach out on social media. See what you think. But it's hard to get a grasp on sound without going and hearing it at a big box store. And even then, that's not your living room. So give yourself a little bit of a cushion on how you approach whatever sound you choose to go with, because sound sounds different in your room, in your house, than in a, you know, hotel, in a, you know, in a situation in a big box retail store. And if you go to a home theater store and start testing stuff out, well, then you're really in a quandary, because it'll never sound like that place. That place has been designed with acoustic tiles and carpet and all sorts of deadening things to make that sound even better in their showroom than at home. So definitely consider all of that. And enjoy whatever you purchase, hopefully.
Tech and other stuff. You're listening to the BBQ.
Last week, I talked about all these crazy letters and numbers and HDR 10 and HDR Plus and just, oh gosh, you know, 4K for this, for that. Linus over at Linus Tech Tips did a spectacular encapsulated way of explaining all of these things. And I found it, as per the way that podcasts work, after we recorded. Yeah, so I have it listed here in the tip section. So this is a great way of understanding what all of that meant and why it matters and why some of it really doesn't. And it's really cool. He broke it down and explained what the standards were, which ones were open, what TVs do this, and what content even does this. And it's just as confusing as it was with Super Audio CD. Remember that? That was,
yeah, for about,
that was nuts.
2 seconds.
Yeah, pretty much right up there with Sony digital audio tape. You know, that lasted a lot longer. You know, the format wars, they are still a raging, and it's really interesting. It was nice to actually get back into the home theater swing of things and read a bunch about
this. Maybe you get a job working at a theater electronics store somewhere.
Oh man, I had forgotten just how many dead formats there were, like Dolby, you know, DT Extreme and True This, right, and True That.
Now we have new challenges where you buy a movie and then it disappears because the company went out of business because you don't actually own the copy.
That happens from time to time. Yeah. Or the royalties and ratings. Oof. And you know, then when. But you know, it is weird though. You say this, but you know, systems that I used to sell in the 90s. Are now condensed down to a 36-inch soundbar. It just blows my mind that, you know, these
ones even the Sonos, which of course we've talked about before. I mean, they're so small.
Yeah,
you
know, that's even different one. Because now you've got voice control and the like inside of it. So crazy.
Building that stuff in. Let's do some sound off.
Okay.
It's your turn to sound off. Email feedback at blindbargains.com or tweet us at blindbargains.
And we don't have much, but we have one interesting question from Ali Musa asking about, hey, are the old shows, the shows from a few years ago, the first ones, can I still get them? Yeah, you can. We have everything to 2008. Well, maybe. Well,
I was there.
So
I won't
play a clip from 2008 because that might be really bad. Let's just dig out a little bit of a clip from our first show, which was our end of year show. It was me, you, Jamie, and Jeff from the end of 2014. Let's just roll that for a second.
Jamie, do you think that it's going to be a situation where you're starting to see a power play between Microsoft giving away all their mobile apps practically for free, or in some cases where you have a subscription to Office 365 and then you have some access to these things versus, well, in Android, they're practically shoving Slides and Drive and everything else down just the same way that iLife is being moved through iOS 8. And on the Mac, it seems like a lot of choice here. So if you're starting out and you're semi-technical, where do you feel like you should go? Do you think Google is one of those things you should learn, or is it still an Apple and Microsoft-driven world?
Well, I think Jeff makes the great point. I think it depends on what people around you are using. If the colleagues that you're with or the students that you're with are using Google Docs, then it would sure be beneficial to be able to use that as well. If you are in a situation where maybe someone else is using another platform, then that's, you know, all right as well. I think that the more choice we have, the more responsibility we have to advocate for good accessibility and do that in a professional manner and a positive manner, but yet a firm manner. And it's the responsibility of the developers to make sure that things are accessible. It isn't going to be as easy as it once was, but I think it's doable and I think it's a must, honestly.
You know, one of the things that I really think that this does is that I was in a group last year, a working group to produce an event, a weekend event, and they have all their stuff on Google Docs. And at the time I had to be, hey guys, we need to move some of this somewhere else or do it somewhere else because the accessibility isn't there for me. And as much as, you know, I appreciate that I have to say that, we want to make that work, it kind of sucks when you have to say, oh, we can't use this because it doesn't work. And so now, you know, given the same tools now, I'm like, yeah, go ahead, I'll get it on your doc and we'll be just fine. I don't have to, you know, worry about trying to change the entire will of the group just for my accessibility needs.
Now, the thing I was going to say a second ago was ChromeVox didn't come into this conversation. Seems that in education,
yay,
especially in secondary,
that's fine.
We have OK Google coming to Chromebooks, but I hope that the Victor hire helps in that area because I really do see Chromebooks and a lot in the wild now. And ChromeVox is just not a conversational piece that we get involved with. And I hope that that comes across in this increased accessibility. Does the panel feel any way about ChromeVox?
I don't care. Yeah, several things in this show. So Kane FB Reader, was the number one. That was the number one of the year. An app that still exists, at least I guess, on the iPhone.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, the free WindowEyes for Office, and of course WindowEyes being merged, and Vario Ultra being released. Rumblings that it's coming back.
Oh my! By the way, since you brought that up,
I know exactly what you're going
to
say.
I think you saw on the mailing list. If you weren't aware, go to the American website for Balm USA as fast as you can and grab your drivers, because that website probably will be changing, not for the better, because a lot of that stuff is shifting back over to Balm Deutschland.
And you might be able to find it, but still with kind of the up in the airness. By the way, we didn't do a story on this, but that's also somebody wrote in and asked about where is the Refresher Braille 18 from APH? Well, the Refresher Braille was really in its core a Balm product.
Correct.
No more Balm at the time. No more Refresher Braille 18. So that's where that went. And, you know, so it's kind of things that affect other things. Yeah. So if you were looking for that, well. So, yes, send us your feedback. It's kind of went a little slow right now. We don't get a lot of
Life is slower. But, yeah, go grab those. And, send us your questions and answers. We love to talk about that. I joke. It's hard to imagine 4 years of doing this particular show. So much has changed the way that we approach, you know, the show, stories, and the industry. I mean, that's, you know, that was before all the mergers and all the craziness really kicked in. So, going to affect probably how we think of this year in 2018. It's going to be very interesting. I will also say that food franchises change from time to time, Jay. How do you think about, Big Boy. Remember Big Boy?
Yeah.
Everybody else does, because that's where we get the idea of a triple hamburger, you know, like bun in the middle hamburgers. That was Kip's Big Boy back in the day. They aren't easily found anymore. Neither is Ponderosa. I actually ate at a Ponderosa in Orlando during NFB convention. They are about 60 left, even though the national chain has gone under. The article that I have here in The Last Word kind of tracks down some of these very famous franchises and what it's like to be a restaurant without a major franchise. Like, it's gone down, but the restaurants still exist somewhat. Like, the franchisees still held it up. So they're like the last of a dying breed.
Ponderosa. Taco Tyco? I've never heard of Taco Tyco.
Yes.
Am I saying that right?
Burger Chef. Yeah. Burger Chef was another one that
we have the one, I think an hour from here. So we have the one remaining hot and now. Which was affectionately, it was pretty much referred to as Rotten Cow over in Sturgis.
Have you eaten at such a place?
No, because you could never, it was only drive through, and you could actually not customize your burger. Like, you took the burger as it came.
Oh, it was one of those. Okay. All right.
It wasn't working for me because I'm pretty picky when it comes to that stuff. So, no.
It's crazy to think about some of these things that are still holding on. Maryland's Fried Chicken, which sounds very familiar, doesn't it? It became something. Yeah. And this article talks about a lot of those things that were kind of taken. Even Dave Thomas, who started Wendy's, was influenced by other restaurants, and the menu represented that. And he was very successful.
And he bought some stuff and spun it off. And it was kind of, it's really interesting. Yeah, you know, restaurants that you thought were dead, and you go to a different state, like
Roy Rogers,
one or two left.
This goes right up there with that Woolworth. Last lunch counter at Woolworth in California still exists. That's a funny article too. I think we've even talked about it, but it was like the signs are still there, but naturally that isn't the price. But yeah, it still had the diner and everything.
Now, have you tried the Luther Burger?
I have not. Done this? Where is this, and what could it possibly be?
This is not new.
Oh, was this the one you talked about on Facebook?
Well, yeah, and I didn't realize I had a name, but it's not new. But it's pretty much what you're doing is you're taking two Krispy Kreme donuts and putting inside of it a burger patty. Mm-hmm. I did it with sharp cheddar. I did not have bacon on hand. It wasn't as bad as I thought, which I guess is not the most ringing endorsement.
I mentioned this to our teenager, and he was on board. But then when I said, well, you didn't want cheese on apple pie at Thanksgiving, and he's like, ew, gross, same thing.
The sharpness of the cheese, along with the sweetness of the Krispy Kremes,
donuts.
I was going to just do one, I ended up doing two. It actually worked out really well. I would definitely add bacon, And I would also, I think for cheese instead of like a cheddar, I would try like a goat cheese or something creamy.
Yeah.
I could see that working really well. Like I've had peanut butter burgers before. Those are good. Delicious.
Agreed. Yeah. Black bean with salsa burgers are awesome. And yeah.
There is a
were these whole donuts or were they like cut like a bagel?
Well, you could cut them. I mean, I just did this at home. And originally I was going to cut one in half. And like, yeah, I don't feel like doing that. That's too much work.
Right. Well, just depends how large your mouth is and what you can wrap it around. And burger with two whole donuts. You weren't doing a double meat either. That might change things.
I'm trying to see who this is. Okay. There's a ballpark in Illinois. So they do it as a deep fried Krispy Kreme donut.
Oh,
around my goodness. Yeah, you want to up the game even more. Get your air fryer out. Oh, that'll be a little healthy.
Oh,
the Gately Grizzlies, a baseball team in Illinois.
Let's let's try and entice Liam to go out there, and he would follow that sword for us. Yeah, I don't know, but he might be up for it. You know, there's a buy another dozen for like a cent more on 12/12.
Yes.
Yeah, probably there's too late deals by the time you hear this podcast. Yeah,
it might be. But
you could get a lot of Krispy Kreme
deal, buy one, get one for a penny or something. Yeah.
Yeah, on 12/12. And, North Carolina, kind of the home for Krispy Kreme. So there's actually one about 3.4 miles away from the house. That's sad that I know that. But thank you, Uber Eats, for that information. Really, really appreciate that. Teenager said he'd do it. So I got to put him to the test. So
yeah, I mean, it's not that hard to do to make it.
No. No, I'm just going to have the excuse of not being on keto and doing that.
Actually, so it's on 12/12. We would have time. You buy a dozen.
By the time the show drops.
Yeah, you have time. So you buy a dozen donuts and then you get a second dozen for $1.
Avoid the ground meat recall that's happening in the United States at the time of recording, you'll be fine. There's some frozen patties out there. Go to Sam's.
It would make sense. It's easy to remember, right? On 12/12, of course, that's when the dozen.
Sure.
That makes sense.
Evil.
So,
totally, totally evil. You can find out about more food-related items as well as news that may show up in this very particular program by following me over at rangerstation.com. Oh, wait. Not,
really?
I don't own that.
That's new.
No. No. Don't own that. I used to be a South Park fan site, believe it or not, back in the day. I think it's changed hands 3 or 4 times. But no, twitter.com/rangerstation, no.com.
Domain name is for sale. Inquire.
Oh, God, help me. I don't own joesteinkamp.com. Don't care to. That was, although I've enjoyed watching people like reach out to that guy because, it's not me.
$19,000.
I won't be buying that. I'm just telling you right now, not buying
that. I can try to negotiate that down, maybe $15,000 or something.
I'm good. I'm totally good. Blogspot was good enough. I'm totally good.
Oh, yes. You can tweet us.
What do you got? Any good deals going on over at AT Guys before AT Christmas? AT
Guys deals? No, we had a lot of stuff on Black Friday. People were eating up those little sound cards and USB cables. Like little $5 deals were doing awesome, which is cool. But we'll do a couple more things before Christmas. So just keep visiting us, atguys.com, or follow us on Twitter at atguys. And we will have stuff up. Or on Facebook as well, atguys. Hey, we should get an Instagram, shouldn't we? Just at least to have the name, just to stop someone else from getting it. You always got to kind of reserve the vanities. You better do that
before it's the reason the shoe goes up.
I will know. Mm-hmm. It's just like we have blind dot bargains, just because we had to get it, in case someone else got it. You can tweet us also for the show at feedback I'm doing it. You tweet us at blind bargains.
That's email. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can email feedback@blindbargains.com with any comments. Two more before the end of the year. We want to know, what do you think was the big news of 2018? We might be doing things a little bit differently this year, but we'll do definitely a recap show along with Patrick's outtake show coming up. Coming up towards the end of the year. So we got a couple more weekly shows and then those, and then we're done. And then we're into 2019. Yeah. And who knows what happens then.
Yeah, for the man who told me that I shouldn't be advancing the show to the end of the year.
No.
End of the year caught up with the show.
December. And this is a good time to advance the show to the end of the year. So this is the time to do it. So thank you so much for listening. Thanks, Patrick, for putting everything together. We always do appreciate it. And thanks, Google, for sponsoring us this week. Again, google.com/userresearch. If you have not signed up yet, do it, because you could get paid for that.
That'll do it for episode 167 next week. No more audio, no more television, but we will talk about Instagram. So send along your questions, feedback at blindbargains.com, or send them along through Twitter so we can ask those questions to our friend who's Jesse. Coming over from Instagram. Yeah, Jesse. All right, cool. So everybody have a wonderful week, and get ready to buy those donuts and ground meat.
Have a good week, everyone. See ya.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2018.